You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
As Kanye West put it on his 2007 album Graduation, this is the story of a champion. Welcome to the Massive Report podcast. Ori, Bart, Sam,
Murph,
I'm Brian. In front of 60,001 Kanye West, with a nylon pulled over his face, Jonathan Mensah, on the other hand, was there for all to see. Mm-hmm. The hero of the game, even without scoring a goal, and yet he says, "No, I got this. I got it all. Gather round me, my crew nation. I will lead you to the promised land." Clearing hundreds of balls and scoring the game winner, Crew won Atlanta nothing. Down in Hotlanta on Saturday afternoon. We'll get to more of that in a moment. We'll break it down, because there is some stuff to break down, including the corner kick winner, which I was so excited to see. It felt like there were some new tactics being thought up and implemented in the corner kick world where we've struggled. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. Like and subscribe if you would. And Ori, of course, even though you're producing today, I hope you have the Saucy Brew Works words of encouragement from Saucy.
Always. I mean, if there's something that's consistent here, it's always the Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Get some food, get some beer, 443 West 3rd Avenue. We're here having a good time watching some triathlon in the Olympics. They got a ton of TVs for sports. So, yeah, Saucy Brew Works. Come check them out.
All right. Murph wants to, apologize, lay down on the road, something.
I never apologize.
We'll let him do that here to explain himself.
Twitter was so fun this week.
You chose violence, man.
I want to make sure that I have this correct, because I didn't see it until after the match. I don't believe he popped up on television. But Kanye West was there with, in sort of an Elvis Presley 68 comeback red leather get-up with the nylon pulled over his face.
So are you aware of why he was dressed this way?
All right. Well, I'm not aware of why he was dressed that way, but I understand.
I assumed it was just Kanye being Kanye.
He's living in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I didn't realize that people could actually live there.
Well, people can't. Kanye can.
Apparently what
Kanye has done in the build-up or the finishing of his album, which I think this is that's what he wears on the cover art, which has been released, is what I was explaining. But he has taken over the visiting locker room for the NFL, or for the Atlanta United, for the MLS teams.
Yeah.
So he has taken that, put in a recording studio.
Are they aware of this?
Yes.
They were aware of this.
But were the crew not
in the visitors' locker room?
Correct. The crew were in the NFL visiting locker room, which I was told is actually a nicer space. Like, it's a bigger space because of more people and whatnot. So the crew were not put out by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a little bit different. But, what a strange – I mean, and then he just started wandering around the stadium and posting videos and – stuff.
And then we memed it on the Massive Report Twitter account after the win. We just had to. 808s and Heartbreak featuring Jonathan Mensah. You should see that meme on our Twitter.
That was a fantastic graphic.
What was funny was I texted Pat like in the 80th minute. This is what I'm doing if they win for a meme. Brett Hiltbrand, the crew sideline reporter for Bally Sports, tweeted 808s and Heartbreak right as I'm making the graphic. And then I posted and he's like, "What the hell, man? You stole my idea." I'm like, no. Let me clarify. I thought of this literally at the same time. So great minds think alike.
Wow. Well, is there room for Kanye to record in new lower.com field at any point? Do we know
I mean, they said they have used every inch of the space there. So there may be – maybe he can do it in the holding cell that they have.
Yeah, they have the one holding cell for Kanye.
You know, I mean, that big chandelier right there in the Huntington Club seems to be a very Kanye-esque type of thing.
Well, yeah. I think he had that in the stadium, the arena tour a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Well, Brian would know this. Who would be the most likely Columbus-based artist to live in a sports stadium to record music?
Lil Bow Wow.
Yeah.
This is Bow Wow.
Yeah.
Is it anything now?
He's in Fast 10.
21
but...
Pilots have a studio Tyler Joseph's house.
Okay.
So he's good. I don't think there's... Well, of course, Kanye is not from it. Is he from Atlanta?
No, he's from Chicago.
That's right.
Yeah, he's from Chicago, but he lives in Atlanta right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, of course he does. He lives in Mercedes.
Yeah. Megatron's butthole.
Now, back in the day, you guys are probably too young to remember this, but I remember Andre Rison of the Atlanta Falcons was friendly with a rap star, and I forget who. Was it MC Hammer? I think he used to hang out with MC Hammer. Mm. Things are just coming full circle. That was a long time. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's when the Falcons played in Fulton County Stadium.
But they were still bad, so yeah. Nothing's changed in that regard.
Yeah, that was amusing and unexpected and sort of put a capper on a day that was the most exciting thing that happened to Atlanta fan. We'll get to that here in a few moments. Murph, what trouble were you causing on social media the other day that I should be aware of?
So this was back on Wednesday night.
Nashville game. We'll get to that.
Yeah. So the Massive Report account, for those who have not already seen it, tweeted out the attendance, which was, what was it, or
18,395 for Wednesday night.
Which is just over 20.
Okay.
So that's a very good crowd, but... I quote tweeted it and said, "Not great, Bob," which was like very slightly done in jest, but was also because that is not a capacity crowd. And in my mind, the first at least few games, if not the whole season, at a brand new state-of-the-art $320 million downtown stadium should be sold out. Now, what I would like to apologize / clarify for here is that subsequently I've learned that this probably came across that I was attacking fans for not going to the game, which was not at all my intention, but I now realize that this is a fan base who has been attacked previously for their inability to fill a stadium.
Uh-huh.
My point, and if you read through the arguments I had with multiple people on Twitter, you can see this.
Of which you've had many.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm
it was
very much a Twitter
so
argument.
Many arguments.
was that I just don't see, I don't believe that the front office is doing enough and that this is... That there was the belief that building the stadium was the Band-Aid to fix the problem, as opposed to coming up with ways to make sure that stadium is not only filled to capacity every game, but, you know, maybe even wait lists like you see for teams around the league. You have a very small window here where you are the new hotness, the shiny new object, not only in Columbus, but in this league. And that is the time to... build this fan base, the people that are going to come back on a regular basis. And I know people respond to me on Twitter that they've brought people out to games and those people really enjoyed themselves. That shouldn't be those people's jobs.
I mean, it's nice of you to do it.
Yeah, that's great. And keep doing it. That's fantastic. But, you know, the fact that you don't see advertisements for games, for when the games are,
hear
advertisements, see them on TV, see billboards around the town. You know, if you drive, at least the last time I was in Chicago, as you get closer to Soldier Field on the freeway, there's a giant, and I know the Fire have really terrible attendance right now, but there was a giant billboard for the first Fire game of the year. Like, things like that I think should be all over Columbus. I don't understand why they're not. And this is my point, and I think that the team is missing the opportunity, and if it's, you know, I think the amount people are having to pay for tickets is a major problem, and I understand that there is an economic business plan here to maximize profits here while this is new. I don't think that should be the approach. You know, I get that that is a business tactic, but long term should be the view here, and making sure that, you know, that you end up like the team that everyone keeps referencing, Sporting Kansas City. They have averaged more than a sellout for the 11 years that stadium has been in existence. Now, someone pointed out on Twitter to me that they only had 17,000 instead of 18,000 on Wednesday night. But, you know, to average more than a sellout in a place like Kansas City, where you're not in downtown Kansas City, you're not by the two other major sports teams in that town, you know, I think that that needs to be the goal, and the focus should be selling this place out, you know, however you want to do it. So if it came across against that I was attacking Crew fans, that was not my intent. I just think that this organization has gone about this the wrong way, and I think... you don't want to end up having built a $320 million stadium in 2 years and be averaging the same thing you were at Mapfre Stadium. That just would be a you know, and even if that's 14,000, I don't think that's good enough. You've put too much into this. You have a championship-winning team. You've done everything, as we were talking before the show, you've done everything right on the field to have a product. And I've talked to multiple people within the league that have now been to the stadium, and... you know, the message has been very clear. There's no more excuses in Columbus. You have everything you need now. You've got team, you've got the stadium, you've got the training facility, you've got everything. And, you know, if the excuse is going to be that the Clippers were playing, then they're doing something wrong, because that's a minor league team, and you know, if you want to play minor league ball, that's fine. Let's go back to Dollar Dog Night. But, you know, that's not what the stadium is supposed to be. They need to figure out how to have that place filled, because even on the Saturday before, it didn't sell out, and it hardly sold out the first game. So, rant over. I will no longer tweet about it.
Well, I think, to your point, and we were talking before we started taping tonight, that, you know, and this is indicative of what we're talking about. Sometimes it's just as simple, and having been in the radio business forever, the biggest mistake you can make about anything, whether it be a band that you are passionate about, about a concert that's coming to town, you can't figure out why people aren't more excited about it. A lot of times it comes down to people just not knowing.
Yes.
And you talked about your Uber driver, who's just a Chelsea fan, who obviously loves the game. This is the perfect evening out for him. He didn't even know that the stadium was open.
Yeah, this was a couple weeks ago, you know, or I guess it was a little bit less than that. But I think it was after the second game, but maybe it was before the first game. But mentioned to me that he was waiting for the new stadium to open to go to his first crew game of the year. And I said, oh, the stadium opened, you know, a week ago or whatever it was. And he was like, really? He's like, I was just unaware. And this is a guy who, like Brian said, big Chelsea fan, but, you know, also goes to a handful of crew games every, you know, not a season ticket holder, but a guy who goes to games. You know, so that's one example. But,
well, I think that the perception problem could be, at least in small part, that people assume, based on the message that's coming out from them, that there are no tickets. Before the first game, I was sort of like, and even in the months leading up, when my wife and I bought our season tickets, of course they're going to put some urgency on it. It's sort of like the message, to me anyway, got muddled that, hey, you know, it looks like they're selling a lot of seats. My wife and I are like, well, we better do this.
Right.
If we want to at least sit where we want to sit. So, you know, we jumped on it weeks before the stadium opened with the perception that, you know, tickets were going to be at a premium.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely what they wanted the perception to be.
Sure, just, I understand that.
Right, but it's, and I talked to somebody on Saturday after the game in Atlanta, because we were, you know, a friend of mine brought this whole thing up, first time I'd seen them since then, and she told me, you know, she talked to people who were like, well, I haven't even looked for tickets because they're not available, right? And it's like, well, no, they are. I mean, you know, the game I went to against New York City for my birthday, you know, two friends of mine got tickets the day of through through Nordic people or through the Nordic, you know, somehow. Yeah. You know, there are tickets available, obviously.
One of my kids bought tickets for the Wednesday game day of. And she's like, well, I know you and Mom are going. Do you think I'm going to be able to find a ticket? Yeah, give it a shot. See what you can come up with. And she was in Nordica, day of, paying face value.
Yeah.
So I think the message has gotten muddled in on many different levels. And not to make this about me, I don't want to do that. But just from in my own,
I made it
world,
about me to start with. Yeah.
At the radio station, you know, we've been great partners with the crew for years. I would love to have players on my show. I used to all the time. I told them the players that I had that I like to have on. It's like open door. Anytime you want to come in. I mean, literally, Kyle Martino would wander in off the street without even calling first.
That was Frankie Haydock in our case.
Frankie lived across the street. He would come in all the time.
If I just wander in, can I come on your show?
Well, the building's locked now. I mean,
especially.
We had no security back then.
There's a picture.
But the point is that for 3 years, I may only get a player on the show. You know, I got tired of asking. And I'm your best friend. You know, it's Debo to myself. Are your best friends in local radio media. We want to help you. Mm-hmm. We love the team. Okay? And I gave up. I threw my hands in the air. I got tired of asking. That's a problem.
Yeah, no, this is something that has been a struggle really in the last, what do you say, 5 years, maybe longer?
Yeah.
That we're like, we're your biggest outlets, and that does include Massive Report, and it does include the Dispatch. Certainly. And it's like, you're making it difficult for us to get the word out about you by not, you know, respond, by really ghosting and not responding to these requests of having, like, players on, or, like, even like we said, like, even over Zoom. Let us interview a player over
Zoom. I get
Zoom,
it. COVID,
whatever.
You want to be careful.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. But this this goes before even that had taken place, is that has become the prevailing attitude. And if you ask the players, they're like, oh, yeah, let's do it. But then somewhere in between when the players say we want to do it, they want to do it, somewhere in between there's something that doesn't happen. So at some point it's like, you know, Murph is right. It's like the fans have done all they can, and at this point they really got to pick up their end. And the attitude that MLS is a professional league, which is true, but MLS is not Major League Baseball. MLS is not the NFL. MLS is not the Blue Jackets.
But with that said, the Clippers shouldn't be a reason you're like, well, we couldn't sell out.
It's different.
No, that's, but
I love going to Clippers games too, but they're, to me, they're almost two different things. This is like, hey, you guys want to go to the ball game, and you pay $7 and you get in and you have several malted grain beverages and you hang out.
Lots of
you enjoy
dogs.
A nice evening. The Crew game is more of like, oh, we're going to the Crew game. It's like, it's your night. It's a destination. It's you take it differently because you're spending a lot more money.
Yeah, exactly. Base single ticket.
I don't get mad if the Clippers lose 8-0.
Right.
You know, because I paid $7 to get in. It's like it's minor league baseball. Okay.
And as our good friend Brian Klein pointed out, he when the Jackets schedule came out, he had the overlapping game, the dates with the overlapping games, and like I suspected, we have a triple header on September 29th.
Yep.
And guess what? The Blue Jackets fan base and the Crew fan base are very, very, very overlapping.
October 16th,
fortunately,
the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, October 16th, you're going to have Kraken.
Yeah, the 29th is a preseason game. I don't think it's going to be too much. But
but it's all they're all at the same time. They're all tipping off, kicking off, dropping the puck within a half an hour of each other.
Yeah, there was a test run for Wednesday because of the Clippers and the Crew, and we might have a couple more of those over the next couple weeks.
But and now we don't need to, you know, dwell on this further. We've got actual games to talk about. But I also think, you know, an issue is the price, and I understand that this is important. It's a high class product, but it is. I mean, I just was looking on the phone prior to this, and it is the cheapest single game ticket you can find is $43 plus tax. That is not something that is sustainable for, if we're talking about trying to not, you know, take advantage of this to grow the fan base, right? That's not something that a family can do regularly. That's not something that low and mixed income families can take part in. I mean, we've got also, you know, when we talk about that outreach and lack thereof, you've got huge, huge new American populations here that, don't want to paint with broad brush strokes, but overwhelmingly you're going to have a lot more soccer fans than, you know, the median within those. These are people that you can be reaching out to grow this fan base. This is something that you need to do to make it affordable so you can have those generational people, like kids like me that grew up in Pat, that grew up going to these games as kids and then stay and remain as fans, and then you're going to have, you know, that are bringing that second generation is. But they're making that prohibitive when the tickets are so costly, and it's not like they aren't getting you everywhere else in that stadium. It's not like it's Atlanta where it's like $5 for a hot dog or something.
That would be a great way to go about it.
But but you've got expensive to get in and expensive in there, and it's wonderful and it's great, and for me, I can do it because me and my wife, dual income, no kids. But for other people, that's not something that you get in. It's hard to build a fan base, and it's hard to really know if you're only getting people that are, you know, going one time, that they're going to sustain with that either.
Well, and I think real quick, you know, if you thought that your tickets should match that of the Blue Jackets just because you're down the street from the Blue Jackets, you're kidding yourself. The Blue Jackets, the NHL,
and they at least have the seats that you can buy cheap as college kids. Like,
but the NHL is the best in the world. You are MLS. Like, you have to recognize. I understand you want to be Major League Soccer, and the Crew in particular want to be recognized in that light, but you also and have your expensive tickets and fill those suites and, you know, have lower deck tickets that cost a lot and, you know, but yeah, a family of four needs to be able to go to a game. That
should be a family section.
Yeah, and if you and it doesn't even need to be day of game because, as I said, I think it should be sold out, but they should be affordable for those people because that's important to your fan base, and you need to recognize where you kind of sit in the marketplace. You know, maybe LAFC, maybe Atlanta can charge different than you, but if you start selling that place out, you create demand. Okay, you can raise the ticket prices a little bit. You know, it seems simple enough to me. But.
Charging and to the extent of what the market can bear right off the bat, does it really leave you a lot of room?
Yeah.
And the economy comes crashing for any reason or the other, which post-pandemic, you never know. Everything is
in all likelihood.
So if your ticket pricing is right there, you're going to have a really hard time to fulfill those seats, even at a large capacity, if not there's a recognition of...
Right.
And here come the concerts. And you are competing for that entertainment dollar. And
yeah.
I'm telling you guys,
and people are dying
I
to
can't
go to concerts.
Keep track of how many concerts there are. They're everywhere. They're at all levels. They're from the basement to Nationwide Arena. Mm-hmm. You know, you're competing for that dollar. 21 mm-hmm. Pilots had 3 shows in October, sold them all out. Not a surprise.
At Nationwide?
Yeah.
Okay.
You've got arena tours coming. You have Express Live that's busy with shows. Those aren't cheap. You know, a lot of those are $40, $50 to get in. You're competing for that same entertainment dollar. And I think if you were to survey Crew fans, you would see a lot of overlap, Crew fans and music fans. So you're not only thinking about the Blue Jackets, you're thinking about concerts now, too. And there's only, even if you have unlimited income for all this stuff, you only have so many nights and so much energy. So, you know, this is going to be an unprecedented year of busy concerts. So the Crew have got to see the big picture here. And as usual, from a business standpoint, I feel like they fail to see the big picture. And they have given themselves this idea that they live in some sort of bubble, this special world, where they don't have to compete for those dollars. And they do. And they need to do a better job of doing it. So I agree with your point.
Yeah.
I understand why people were a bit raw about it.
Again, I apologize that it came across the way it did. That was not at all my intent. You know, I was, before I started covering the team, I was right there, you know, in the Nordic doing all that. I heard all the talk about the Crew not selling it out. I was in meetings with, you know, back before the Nordic when it was V Army and whatnot, in meetings with Mark McCullers and people about, like, how do we get more people and what was then the North End and things like that, you know, and frankly, that should be their job, you know. I'm glad fans are willing to help. As Sam, as you pointed out before, Save the Crew handed this team, you know, essentially a blueprint of what to do, a lot of that in the business side of things, but, like, you know, there are people there that they can use, but, again, this shouldn't be their job. Opening this stadium should have been a flawless thing. It should have been done perfectly. And not even just the attendance. There have been, I mean, you know, the POS system going down the first game. The roof leaking when the Nordic did, you know. There are things here that have not been handled well. And I know not all of that is on the front office, but it's just not a great look.
All right. Well, hopefully going forward, message will be received somehow. But I'm not holding my breath.
I'm going to stop tweeting attendance. How about that? It just solves all of our
problems.
No, you
still stop tweeting. You can continue to tweet the attendance. I will just stop quote tweeting it.
Well, the good news is we have a fun team to watch. And they continue to find different ways to get results with so many guys missing. And, Orion, we're really going to lean on you tonight.
Sure.
To kind of break down tactically what we were doing because we mix things up as far as how we were set up on Saturday, right?
Yeah, so I guess we should summarize Wednesday's game since we got
to
cover
that
too.
I want to work
honestly,
from Atlanta backwards to Nashville.
Honestly, you can just say for Nashville, they had a lot of chances. They should have won. That's literally it. That's all. That's the way to summarize
Kevin
that
like
game.
This
Kevin had like three penalties.
I mean, really, we got jobbed there. The officiating was terrible, but we should have taken care of business regardless. Mm. Nashville lost interest in scoring after about the first 5 minutes.
Pretty much.
And yeah. It was just one of those games. You know, they were just looking for a result.
Yeah.
They were missing Walker Zimmerman. They pulled their top scorer off the field early. you know, you could kind of see the forest for the trees there. It is what it is. We got a result.
Yeah,
but this Atlanta game was so much more interesting.
Absolutely.
Against a team that, changed managers really needed to give their fans something to hold on to, and we sucked the air out of that
And
place.
Think about the environment that they played in on Saturday. Taylor Twellman tweeted it, and then I retweeted him, and then he retweeted me because I was discussing this on Twitter. That was maybe the toughest environment the crew has played in since the pandemic started.
So here's something I will say, because I got so many tweets, you know, troll tweets asking me about the attendance, you know, what do you think about Atlanta's attendance?
Yeah.
So I put out a tweet that said I was impressed with that and still stand by my position. The one thing I will say about Atlanta, and I've heard this from multiple people, is like, for as big as that crowd is, and maybe it's because it's an NFL stadium, so it's not meant for the acoustics, like, it gets loud, you know, like Ohio Stadium gets loud, but there's 100,000 people that, you know, like, for 67,000 people, you know, Jacob from the Dispatch was there, like, I talked to someone else who was there, like,
wanna ask him
about know how crazy loud that, I mean, it was definitely louder than most stadiums, but
I mean, didn't Arthur Blank, didn't they get, or was it the Hawks that got busted because they were actually pumping in crowd noise into, I know it was one of the Atlanta teams. It was the Falcons. Yeah, exactly. Oh, the Falcons where they play right now.
Well, and I thought even on, I mean, TV, it sounded like the fans were mic'd. Because sometimes they were louder than the announcers, which if you do the mic
loud, if that makes any sense, I mean they have.
Yeah, no, it's a
good atmosphere.
It was a great atmosphere.
Atlanta United,
and the occasion of it too. It's the first time Atlanta United was able to sell that many tickets. Their star striker Joseph Martinez started a game for the first time in 2 months. They're playing the defending champions in their home stadium. Kanye West is watching the game. Like, this is a huge environment, and the crew took the situation with new tactics and got the victory. And
all right, how did they set up that
4-4-2? And that to me was a really, and Caleb Porter did say this in our press conference about their defenders and how they played, and I think it makes sense for his tactics. It was a ballsy move by Caleb Porter. I think having that new tactic, you don't see it often with the crew. Pat was like, when's the last time they started a 4-4-2?
Yeah, it's been a long
years.
Time. And I think it was really interesting because, you know, they didn't even, it was almost, at times it was a 4-4-2. But defensively, it was more of a 4-2-2-2 because Molino and Maton stayed pretty narrow defensively. Neither great defenders, but both stayed narrow to just kind of keep that space in the middle, you know, compact.
Yeah, the midfield was very compact in that game.
And then the idea was breakout and transition.
Bradley
Wright Phillips pulled off the back line a lot. He almost played like a Zellerayan role at times. And you saw exactly what they wanted to do on that chance that Hurtado had. And, you know, a guy who, I know that he took a lot of flack on Twitter. This is a guy who wasn't training really before he got to the crew, so I feel like you give him a little bit of leap, but that's a goal. That should be a goal 9 out of 10 times.
Miguel Berry would have got it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
But that was the play they wanted.
They were able to transition into their offense so well, and it came from the back line being able to stop Joseph Martinez. Buba Keita was reading his runs really well. He was heading the ball out of the box. Jonathan Mensah had maybe the best game a defender's had all season in MLS with a goal and having 14 clearances, 11 of them headed clearances. But yeah, when we saw Maton and Molino starting on the wings, we knew they were going to kind of be narrow, invert, because they don't really like to park out wide like Pedro or Luis. I know Bart's got something.
Just one more point on the Jonah stats, the Jonah Love train. You mentioned the 14 clearances, 3 interceptions, 90% of his passes complete, 1 block shot, 0 fouls.
Yeah, that's pretty
0
good.
0 fouls from the center back, and shout out to Yellow Nation Army that got that off who scored.
Yeah,
and
Jonathan Mensah played.
He was great.
Tremendous.
Just king shit.
Well, and I think just in general, you know, first of all, credit to Caleb Porter. This is a guy who has taken, not to overuse this word flack, but like a lot of flack for not winning on the road. You go into Atlanta, as already mentioned, the biggest crowd in club soccer. You try out something new, given, you know, your limited options there. So, and it works. And I think, you know, you look at, you know, I wrote this in our What We Learned. You know, this, I think this is not plan B, but plan C that we've seen this year. When they went to Cincinnati and played Zellerayan as that false nine, you know, yes, you went down 2-0, but it worked in the sense that you were able to come back. You know, even when they brought Miguel Berry and Eric Hurtado on, they were more on the
wings.
This
team's, if the team doesn't have this strong of a mentality, we're not talking about a team that's got 9 results in their last 10. 6 straight without a loss. They've got their second road win. They haven't since the new stadium is open, they haven't lost. Their last loss was against, what, Philly in the middle of June. And with the two-striker system, I love seeing that. I think it worked really well. I'd like to see it more. I'd like to see Jossi and Bradley play up top together for a half or for a whole game. I think that could work really well because Bradley is a good creator when he's backing off on defenders and you can get Zardes to make those runs and get some open through balls.
Why were we able to get out on those counterattacks on more than one occasion against Atlanta? What were they doing that allowed us to do that?
Atlanta does, and they've done this, this has always been their thing. Even, you know, different managers have done it different ways, but they play on that big turf field where they want to play fast. Mm-hmm. So they expand. When they get on offense, the fullbacks get high, people push forward. They want to play this entertaining, fast soccer. And what Caleb Porter realized was, okay, let's deny them. They haven't been good this year at even getting Joseph Martinez when he's out there in dangerous positions. Let's just play some good defense, and then let's exploit that when they push numbers forward. We'll use their speed against them, you know. And I think it worked, you know.
Well, they got sucked up the field on more than one occasion. And they talked about it on ESPN or on ABC. Mm-hmm. They were rather shocked with the lack of flair and finishing that Atlanta just...
Well, then they haven't been watching Atlanta this year.
Atlanta can't put the ball in the net.
Well, they probably haven't seen them a lot, you know.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? They're doing all those games. I mean...
Well, okay. But they seem surprised at their lack of creativity. Mm. They've got some real problems down there.
Here's the thing. They had creativity. It's just that the Crew defenders were reading their runs well. Joseph Martinez, I think, is starting to get his form back, get his fitness back a little bit. There were some chances there where the ball was open in the box and they just couldn't take it. But whenever there was a good shot, Aloy Room was making a save. And you can say that Aloy Room is probably the best goalkeeper in MLS
And
right
he
now.
Was completely robbed to be on the bench for MLS Team of the Week.
Bono got it from Toronto.
I mean, two clean sheets and what, 11 saves there in Atlanta?
Yeah, he's made 11 saves this week.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you've got Room playing well. You've got Mensah playing well. And then
Marlon Harrison.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Can we talk about Marlon Harrison?
The fact that the Crew have these signings, you know, when we saw the new signings, we thought about Bradley Wright Phillips, Kevin Molino, sort of the headline signings. Perry Kitchen as a depth piece. Mm-hmm. Alexandru Matan is an exciting young international player from Romania. Marlon Harrison, right back project, comes in at center mid with Artur injured, Kitchen not being available a lot, Aiden Morris tearing his ACL in April, and he has played the part excellently. Mm-hmm. He's been a phenomenal addition in center mid, and he's moved his way up the depth chart. Saad Abdul-Salam also very composed at right back, helps in transition, good passing, and I think Buba's worked his way up the depth chart too. I think when Josh Williams gets healthy, he'll go back into the starting lineup, but Buba's confidence is better. We talked to him on Friday before they went out to Atlanta, and he says his confidence is growing. He's worked a lot with Ezra Hendrickson on how to be a professional on and off the field, and that's really helped him a lot. So that is something that is really good for the Crew, because when we went into the season, you knew center back wise, Mensah, Williams, Vito, Buba, there were a little bit of questions about, but after the couple games he's played, I think you're really confident in Buba at center back, and the way the Crew played was enough to get that momentum against Atlanta, but they didn't score an open play. They get a corner kick goal, which is something that was used against them early this year for losses. Now they're doing it against other teams, and that play was perfection.
Before we get to the corner, I want to touch on Marlon Harrison, because, as Ori said, and we've written about this, you know, he's a guy that was brought in. He's played both right back. He's played right wing. He's played central midfield. And he's not a young player. You know, he's in the prime of his career right now. But they brought him in as a guy that they saw, hey, if you spend a year or two strictly playing right back, we see the same type of abilities in you that makes Harrison awful effective in this system. And then he gets hurt in preseason, doesn't get a chance to really play. They bring in Abdul-Salam because they need cover there. He's been great, I think. He adds something very different than awful. He doesn't attack as much, but he adds height. You know, he's almost like as big as the center backs. And he's a good defender, and he's played well, I think. But that allowed, when Marlon Harrison came back from injury, it was like, okay, well, let's stick you in practice in midfield right now until we figure things out. And he played well. And so when, you know, Artur's out, they don't know how long until he gets back. You know, that's a guy who may be out for a while. Then you lose, and you lost Aiden. And now Liam Fraser's gone for the Gold Cup. It was like, all right, let's slot him in. Let's see what he can do. And he gives you – he's not Artur. Artur is – and I think it's not been talked about enough how much they miss Artur and everything he does next to Darlington Nagbe. But Marlon Harrison gives you a lot of those things. Doesn't do them all as well as Artur, but he's rangy. He's decent on the ball.
Notice
for an MLS player, he's good on the ball.
Well.
Yeah, you've seen him get into good attacking positions. He's not finishing yet.
Right.
And that's something.
He's about to score. It's, it's going to happen.
Well, and that's like, if you think about Artur, it took a while. He had some chances.
He's still only got, what, 2-3 goals?
Yeah. But they started, you know, they're all last year and a half or so. Right. And they've been in big moments.
They've all been critical.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think they see a lot. I know they see a lot of Artur and Marlon Harrison. And, you know, that's a guy that, you know, you've kind of found out of nothing. And, you know, I think even when Artur gets back, you know, now you have a solid depth piece as you wait for Aiden Morris to get back, who isn't that type of play. It's a different type of play.
No.
But, yeah, let's talk about the set piece because that was awesome.
To kind of put a capper on that, when he's on the field, I'm like, that's fine. I'm cool with that. Yeah, just to
he's Hector Jimenez 2.0.
Yeah, he's like, he
looks like he
knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to do too much. He's just doing his thing.
Another midfielder.
Doing the right thing on that corner.
And another midfielder that can complete 95% of his passes every game, which is what Darlington does every game.
Things, those accuracy numbers that I love to see. And Colin Johnson broke down the corner kick for us at massreport.com with some still shots and everything. If you want to look at how this play built up for yourself, recommend that. But Ori, if you would, take us through that, because that was something obviously that they cooked up in training.
Yeah, assistant coach Pablo Moreira has been working with Caleb Porter for a long time. I think since back with his days at Akron, he's been working with him. So this is over a decade. And he's kind of a set-piece guy, works on the plays for set pieces. And this play just worked to perfection. The Crew hadn't scored on a corner since Jonathan Mensah scored against famed Real Esteli. But I don't even think that should count because nobody was marking anybody defensively.
Right.
Whereas this time around, it was just a play. And you have Zelarayán on the field, who obviously didn't start, had some tightness in his hamstring, comes off the bench right as the second half starts, takes the corner. You know, and what was great about that play, because oftentimes when the Crew took corner kicks offensively, it was either everyone's making a run at the near post or everyone's making a run at the back post. This time around, you had guys making runs at both posts. Hairston comes in narrow to that near post. I mean, he gets the flick perfect. I mean, that flick was phenomenal. The placement of the ball from Zelarayán helps make the flick even easier. And then you have three guys on rushing in the back post. Molino was there. Mensah was there. Mensah ended up getting the final touch. And you see Atlanta's defenders basically looking at the ball. They don't see Mensah behind them. They don't see Kevin behind them either. And Mensah just connects on the header. And that shut up the crowd at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
And Atlanta, I forget who it was, one of the Atlanta players after the game said that they knew that this was something the Crew have done previously. And they just didn't defend it well. And looking back on it, you know, Jonathan Mensah falls down.
Yeah.
He doesn't fall down. He's probably better marked, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, I mean, on all set pieces, you usually need a little bit of luck, right?
Always.
I mean, like, unless you're talking about the one that Jonathan scored against Real Esteli, where it's just terrible defense.
That's a training ground header that you do against, like, no defenders,
you know,
basically.
You either need luck or you just need, like, a guy that's bigger, you know, bigger, stronger, jumps over a guy type. I mean, like, that's why you don't see set piece goals that often, right? And you got it there a little bit, and the Crew deserves some luck, frankly, on set pieces. And, you know, credit to Jonathan for just powering that header on frame, because I forget who the defender was that got a piece of it, but, like, that was going in the goal.
It was a perfect header, big goal for him, first in 3 years. He hadn't scored in MLS in 3 years. And Columbus gets their second road win of the season, and the fact that they've, what, doubled their road wins this year compared to last year, well, technically not, because 0 times 2 is still 0, but you get my point.
Are we coming up on, like, you know, career highs for a single season road wins for Caleb Porter?
We'll have to check it out.
Wouldn't that make it? Is that 2 road wins now?
2 road wins this season, yeah.
Might be.
It could be. We might have to check it out, but I think we also need to start discussing records for, you know, saves in a season for a Crew goalkeeper. We'll see if Ayla Room can keep that up, as well as long unbeaten runs or just best stretch of 15, 16 games, because we're almost half. We're getting close to the end of the first half of the season. They're going to play New York City here Friday, and then they're going to host DC United for a midweek game, and then they're done with the first half of the season. This team's only lost 3 games,
mm-hmm.
and that came during the Columbus SC era.
And we still have a third, like, over half of our home games still yet to play.
Yep.
And I don't think they've even, like, they've started maybe one game with your top 11. I don't even know if they've started a game with your top 11, because not even anything when Molino on paper is in your number one 11.
Right.
And you didn't have him there early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think
when everyone else was there.
When Artur was playing, yeah. He
right.
was clearly
in August, you'll get to the closest thing to a top 11, because Jossi will be back from the Gold Cup, win or lose for the United States. He'll be at striker. You could get Diaz in on the wing as well if you consider him a starting
player. He'll be back now.
Yeah, yeah, Diaz will be back now. And then we'll see whether or not they decide, you know, now with Milton Valenzuela still injured, do they start Pedro Santos as the left back in consecutive games more consistently?
Because
he plays well in that position.
And I think what, you know, as much as it sucks to have, and Caleb Porter's brought it up a number of times, to have this many guys out for injuries or for international absences, it's established the depth that they wanted at the beginning of the season, and some of that's been added since then. And these guys have gotten minutes that they wouldn't have otherwise. And now when you do have everyone back, like Ori was saying, now you have pieces that are ready to play off the bench because they've played. You know their roles. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, that makes you as deep of any team in this league. You know, I mean, say you get into a playoff situation like last, you know, obviously in MLS Cup they lost a couple guys with COVID and they won. But, like, you know, situations like that where – you know, guys go out for one reason, you know, a red card, two yellow cards, whatever it is. And, you know, if you lose Darlington Nagbe for a game, you don't want that to happen. But I feel pretty good about putting Marlon Harrison in a big game.
And those guys themselves are gaining more confidence.
Exactly.
Bubakeda is gaining more confidence. Hairston as well. Miguel Berry, too, comes in for a goal against Cincinnati a few weeks ago. You need the pieces on your bench to have that in-game fitness, that in-game experience. They're getting that now with all the Gold Cup players gone, with these injuries, and all that's going to do is just going to make this team even better in a very tight Eastern Conference. Again, every game they're playing in the East is really important because of the amount of teams that are so close to them in points. They're only 2 points back a second, and I'm pretty sure they're in fifth right now.
Well, the good news is we haven't even gotten to play Miami yet.
You're correct.
There's some points coming there.
Yeah. Also, the three losses is tied for third best in the league.
Who has the other? So Seattle has two losses.
Seattle has two, and Nashville has one.
That's
Nashville
right.
Nashville has eight ties.
Yeah, Nashville has one loss this season. That's nuts.
We saw they're perfectly happy with a draw.
Oh, they love draws.
Yeah.
I think they kept attacking, like, kind of, like, shyly. And then once, I think in the second half, when the Crew were really bombarding them, they just parked that bus as far back as they could.
Absolutely.
And were like,
parked
it
about
15
minutes.
We're gonna leave with 1 point, but whatever.
Yeah, they were not interested in winning that game, which can be frustrating.
Hey, to be
and
fair,
it worked out for them.
Yeah, and the amount of points they're getting, I would be surprised if they didn't make the playoffs. They should be in the playoffs again, which would make it 2-for-2 in their years in MLS.
Yeah, must be nice. they're the Vegas, Golden Knights.
Well, Miami is certainly not that. Miami has been the antithesis of
that. MLS would figure out how to make them competitive. And, oh, my God, I watched Taylor Twellman posted the highlights of that New England game. That was, like, defending? Question mark?
Well, the highlight, the highlight that came around with that was Miami in the first half, the keepers trying to transition into an attack. You see Gonzalo Higuain. He's standing, I don't know, like 20 yards away from his own goal. He's just walking back. You see the attackers. I think his brother was out there trying to attack, and there's nobody at striker trying to help, making a run. He's just walking back like he's on vacation in Miami because he's on vacation in Miami. He's literally on vacation in Miami, and that team is a laughingstock right now in MLS.
That was painful to watch. I'll tell you what, fellas, let's take a quick break. You can hit pause on the old mixer there. Ori, I'm going to go and get myself another saucy refreshment. And then we'll talk about, it seems like we just saw him, NYCFC. And Ori, you're Yankee Stadium, right? We're going there, right?
You will allow me a short Yankees rant.
No,
I need to
no.
rant.
This is a soccer.
No,
match.
I don't care.
You can keep the rant. We're gonna go and get.
Fine, I'll rant while you guys are getting beer. How about
pause.
That?
properly refreshed here at Saucy Brewworks. We're back with a preview of Friday night at 7:30 as, for the first time in 2 years, almost, your Columbus Crew go to Yankee Stadium, the house that Ruth built.
No, the house that Posada built.
The house, yeah. You're right.
Did anyone build it?
Yeah, Steinbrenner built it.
I don't know,
yeah.
But someone who loves soccer certainly didn't build that stadium because it is not configured for the beautiful game. And it's
not
really
it's not configured
really
for America's pastime either.
I don't like it. I've never been there.
The second ever game at that stadium, it was the Yankees versus the then named Indians, now named Guardians, and the Cleveland team won 19-2 with a million home runs down the right field fence. And all of us were like, "Why is the right field fence so short? It's like 330 from home plate." And
that's why you've got Aaron Judge.
And that's why we suck.
Real estate is very valuable in that region of the country, and the park had to be as small as possible. It's way too small for soccer. I'm going to watch the game because I got to watch my crew, but I hate games there. And it's been a while since we've been there. Ori, tactically, and I know you're going to talk to Caleb Porter about this tomorrow, you have to rethink everything, don't you?
Yeah, you definitely do. I mean, the soccer is always a little bit tricky there while the Yankees baseball team blows ways in creative, you know, the most creative ways to lose. I'm not going to talk about it here, even though I really want to.
You know nothing of pain, young man.
I know many of pain. Four wild pitches,
nothing.
No hitter. They still fucking
lose
to Guardians.
You know nothing.
Anyways, but yeah, Yankee Stadium is not a fun place to play at all. It's a very difficult place to play for MLS teams. The field is narrow. It looks awkward because you've got the long soccer field in between, like the center field wall, and it's all misproportioned. I'm going to ask Caleb Porter about it at training on Tuesday and see what he has to say. I'm not going to say, like, yo, Caleb, how shitty is the field? Excuse my language, but I'm going to ask it in a more delicate fashion.
I talked to guys about it just playing there in the past, and a lot of people have told me that it is, you know, it is narrow, but, like, there are other, you know, like where the Earthquakes used to play, Spartan Stadium used to be very narrow.
Yes.
There's a few of them in the league, but that once you're on the field and in the game, like, it doesn't change a ton. You know, it is weird when you go out for a throw-in. I've heard that a couple times because on the bench side, there's, like, acres of space before you get to the wall. And the substitutes, actually, I talked to guys that, you know, didn't start games, and it's, like, it's weird because you sit so far back from the field and things like that. But a lot of guys have told me and coaches, you know, Greg Berhalter used to say, like, you know, once I'm down there, I don't really notice it much. So, you know, it's certainly the narrowness of the field is the biggest thing. I think the sight lines is more of a fan thing. And maybe, you know, for certain, you know, maybe set pieces or something would be an aspect. But, yeah, the narrowness, and that affects the crew because of the way the crew play. You know, they would like to, I mean, you know, they showed on Saturday that they can keep things narrow and counterattack. But you'd like to spread the field out and possess and whatnot. And, you know, that's not the best tactic at Yankee Stadium.
I'd be interested to hear Caleb Porter's thoughts on, you know, he's now played in two different soccer-specific stadiums this year in terms of home stadiums, in historic Cruz Stadium in Lower Dot Com Field. And I would like to know his thoughts on playing in a baseball field.
Yeah, we'll see what he says.
4 years into 5 years in NYCFC? How long have they been around?
2015, 6 years.
Six seasons.
Yep. No plan to move away from
them. No.
They
can't. There's no place to build a soccer stadium in downtown New York.
Just put them with the Red Bulls.
Red Bull Arena's really nice.
It is. Like I went out there. It's great.
So we'll see how the
like
game
the
goes.
And the Jets.
Yeah, it's a Friday night kickoff, so be prepared for that.
I don't think you can be the New York City team.
Where do the Cosmos play?
I think it's a very
Giant Stadium.
Yeah, they play the Giant
some
Stadium.
High school out
yeah.
somewhere.
Cosmos.
The new Cosmos. Yeah, they played at Hofstra University, didn't they?
But I don't think you can be called the New York City team and then play in, you know, and they build it that way at the beginning was, you know, we're the New York City team, and the Red Bulls are not, essentially.
They're the New Jersey team.
Right, and then all of a sudden move in, not only out of New York City, but to the Red Bulls arena would be an embarrassment, I would say.
I mean, every other New York, you know, the Giants are out there, the Jets are out there.
There's so many teams out there, and most of them stink, which is kind of nuts to think about.
Well, you brought up San Jose, where they used to play at San Jose State University. I think that is the closest correlation that we have from the old days of MLS. And certainly going back to the North American Soccer League, they play anywhere on terrible turf fields. This is sort of like a throwback to the old days of American professional soccer, and it's a problem that's not going to be solved. I'm curious, though, has New York City FC figured out, after all these years, how to turn that into a lock as far as a home field advantage tactically?
I'm sure they have a certain tactic that benefits when they play in that stadium. They haven't played there all that much this year. The one game that comes to mind that they played at Yankee Stadium this year was back in April when they played FC Cincinnati and won 5-0.
Well, that tells us nothing.
That's a good point. Because when they're playing at Red Bull and they get wins, I mean, I'm trying to see their last game at Yankee Stadium. Oh, speak of the devil, their last game at Yankee Stadium. I thought they played this game at Red Bull, but the last game they just played on Sunday, beating Orlando 5-0.
That's a significant win. Good Orlando team.
Very good. That's a very significant win, and that's something I'm also curious to see what Caleb Porter has to say, because he's told us about, you know, it's tough to play a team that really needs a win, and that's what he talked about with Atlanta. Atlanta was on this winless run. They're desperate for a victory, and it's difficult to play against a team like that. It offers certain challenges. What are the challenges in playing a team that now has a big confidence boost, getting a 5-0 win at home against one of the best teams in your conference? Because New York City, two losses to Columbus this season, both by the free kick of Lucas Zelrayan, three goals against New York City off of free kicks, and they're going to be haunted by that coming into this game on Friday, and you won't have to see New York City again, Columbus Crew fans, for the rest of the season
they
after this game.
It looks like 2-0-1.
At home or at Yankee Stadium?
At Yankee Stadium. Two wins. They played Cincinnati, beat them 5-0, tied Toronto at Yankee Stadium in May. And then the 5-0. So 2 5-0 wins and a 1-1 draw.
That's weird.
That's weird.
Probably never happened.
And I think that probably that has to do with the feet. You know, Orlando wants to play possession soccer, right? Similar to the Crew. You know, I'd have to go back and watch that game to see what Orlando did so poorly there, because, as you said,
that's very good.
Cincinnati, you understand why that happened.
Even without Alex here, Toronto,
this was a very poor, you know, a Toronto team that was really struggling in May 15th. Went there and got a 1-1 draw. So, you know,
after they beat Columbus also.
I wonder if Caleb looks at what A, worked for Toronto, B, didn't work for, well, not Cincinnati.
Well, you showed up Cincinnati, and that didn't work for you.
Maybe we see another, you know, tactical, you know, very clear tactical adjustment, not just, you know, tweaks there.
I think it's funny that you brought that up, because I'm sitting here thinking, you know, considering how Lucas has had his way basically on free kicks, you play Lucas, Pedro, and Matan up front and have him just try to get fouled.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, you need to have Lucas starting up front.
Just axe them.
Literally.
And then you get a foul outside of the box and just, you know. Yep. Well, if all of our shots are free kicks, you play
NBA style and just lean into guys as you're shooting to force for a foul.
I think New York has to be very aware now to not foul Lucas. I thought that before the last game.
That's going to burn them because if they're not trying to foul them so that Lucas doesn't score on them, they're going to open somebody to score.
It's so hard not to commit a foul.
The game will turn on how well they're able to manage that, because it's going to be in their heads, and they're a team that likes to play very physically, and they've been burned by that.
Yep.
Because they keep dropping guys in the wrong spot. This has happened 3 times. We've literally beaten them 2 times with 3 free kick goals in 2 games.
And not to mention, Lucas was also a thorn in their side in 2020. First game of this 2020 season, scores that big goal to win the game against 10 men. And when they played again in October after Columbus was on its worst run of their championship season, they got a 3-1 win, and Lucas also played very well in that game,
too. Well, and another thing to consider, and not that their current goalkeeper, you know, handled himself great against the Lucas free kick, but Sean Johnson's still with the U.S. national team.
Yeah, he'll be gone.
So he'll be
guaranteed.
Gone. So, you know, I mean, that Lucas...
Sean didn't handle it too much better.
No, but the Lucas free kick in the last game was very savable.
He could have got that,
Of the three that he scored against New York City, the one he scored at Lower.com Field was the worst one.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, he steps a little bit to the left, right before, and you know, doesn't
he
get
saves
his
it into
back.
His own net. He gets two hands on it, but he pushes it into his own
right.
net.
He just didn't get enough on it.
I still think that ball tailed on him a little bit more than he thought it was, because his hands were coming in close, like he thought he was going to get it, and then it just kind of like
he was completely psyched out. Yeah. If you looked at how he was positioning, going out and literally grabbing his teammates and positioning.
That's always a good sign.
There, that, I'm like, you don't see that very often. They are freaked out about this, and it's going to be in their heads.
If Columbus beats New York City again on a Lucas free kick again, what that would be just wild. Have we ever Have we ever seen somebody score three win games against the same team three times off of purely free kicks?
I doubt it, given the free kick records in MLS, because Giovinco's got six and seven,
right? Yeah.
So it would be impressive if he also did that.
Yeah. Yo, you had the standings up in your laptop there, Murph. NYC is they're in sixth,
right behind the Crew.
And I mean, we're so packed together again. New
one
England
point
is
back,
beginning
but
to pull
with the game
away.
In hand.
How is Philadelphia above Crew in the standings, technically? Because
goals scored.
Yeah. Oh, goals scored. Because it's like, it's not goal differential. Yeah, I thought it would be point
goals
per game.
Oh, it's probably head to head. You're right.
Yo, it'd be head to head because they won't beat them. Yep.
New England is beginning to be scary.
Yeah, I watched New England play last night, and I mean, we don't need to dive into all these teams, but New England is very, you know, this looks like Bruce Arena, peak LA Galaxy. And he doesn't have, you know, some of the... There's no Robbie Keane on that team. But there are some very good players.
They're the best team in the East, whereas...
They may be the best... I mean, they're...
Better than Seattle?
They're statistically the best team in the league. I know Seattle probably is... A lot of people would take them head-to-head, but I don't know. The best coach in MLS history with the talent they've got right now and the confidence they have.
They should come in first in the East, while the last six playoff spots is going to be a jumble between about...
I'm very interested in it. This is just a big tangent, but you know, this final half you mentioned earlier, we're about halfway through the season. As the Crew gets guys back, we talked about the depth that this team's established. You know, even 3 and 8 days or 3 and 7 day stretches, you know, I think fans should feel really good. You know, if you make it through, you know, now you're getting Diaz back, but if you make it through the next couple weeks, you get some guys off the injury report. I mean, and continue to get points. You know, they are in a very good spot. Sitting in fifth, I know people at the beginning of the season were talking supporters' shield and whatnot, but sitting in fifth, as Ori mentioned, 2 points back of Nashville, who's in second, same amount of games played. You know, and there's a Philadelphia's played one more game, New England's played one more game. So,
yeah.
You know, I think they can make a very real push at this season, and that maybe don't not catch New England, but, you know, if they continue to play as well as they have when everyone gets healthy, Nashville is a very realistic, you know, team to catch. Orlando obviously just showed they're beatable. I mean, it'll be a fun end of the season.
I mentioned this to somebody when they were talking about the depth and like, oh, where's all this, you know, vaunted depth that we thought we were going to have? And I'm like, the depth was built to cover either injuries or call-ups,
right.
Not both at the same time. Yeah. So you're put in a position that's really tough to really plan for outside of call-ups. However, the fact that they're still getting points with this B almost C squad is really, really important.
And they're getting points in a tougher schedule. Last year was not a legitimate MLS schedule because of COVID. They played Cincinnati 4 times. They played Chicago a bunch. They were getting points off of bad teams. This season, they're playing better teams. The Eastern Conference is better. They're not playing the same team with the same tactic every other week like they were in 2020.
Well, they are with New York City.
Okay, sure. But that's the thing with the schedule. They're not playing that many teams that you'd consider completely bottom of the barrel. I mean, you look at August. D.C. is a decent squad now in playoff contention. Atlanta will get there potentially. Chicago, not that great, but you never know with them. Red Bull's solid team. And then a stretch.
Great attendance, though.
Great attendence. Yep. Seattle and Cincinnati back-to-back at home. Seattle, obviously, is going to be a huge game. And I think hell is real Cincinnati, especially there were murmurs on Twitter about potentially USA-Mexico could be in Cincinnati. If that's announced before that hell is real game, oh, my God, that game would be nuts.
Yeah, just looking at the schedule, you know, some winnable games in August. In September, you got Miami. You got New England again. Montreal is one of those teams you like.
Right.
Don't have a good feel for. October.
Played well against
Miami
New England,
again.
Yeah,
I mean that's the thing though. When you get to September, October, like where are these teams going to be? Will Montreal fizzle out? Will Miami get better? We never know. That's because MLS is such a random league. It's not like in the Premier League where you're looking
at
the schedule
in
October.
Here's another thing to consider. The transfer window is still open.
And they could sign somebody.
I asked Caleb Porter this past week, and he said he's pretty happy with, you know, this group and the depth that's developed, and he's really looking forward to when everyone gets healthy, just like we were talking about. But, you know, they are always looking, and, you know, you could still add somebody here. You know, I think, you know, maybe they add another central midfielder if Artur's, you know, potentially, you know, late in the season or season ending, if they're being really cautious with him. You know, if you, as good as Marlon Harrison's been, if you can add a game-changing level central midfielder to play alongside Darlington Nagbe and with Lucas Zelarayán, that elevates that team another level. So,
well, Room was a Gold Cup guy.
Yeah.
Is there a Gold Cup guy who's out of contract that would fit in?
I don't know about out of contract.
Or, you know, obtainable.
I mean, that's kind I mean, of David Guzman's looked pretty good for Costa Rica.
Yeah, you want to just kidding. Add some more spine in the midfield?
Kidding. There's no one that stands out to me, and I've watched a good amount of those games. Or anyone that, I mean.
Well, for Gold Cup, maybe sign a guy from Qatar. I don't know. Almoez Ali as a backup striker. Qatar's so good right
Italy
now.
Room looked, I mean, it was, you know, I tweeted early on in the Gold Cup, you know, Aloy Room playing well, Crew 96 need a goalkeeper with Zach Steffen leaving, and a lot of people referenced that tweet when they did actually sign him, and I had no actual, not, you know, that was just a complete luck thing on my part. But, you know, I mean, that was a pretty clear, okay, they need a goalkeeper. Here's a guy who's playing well and actually has played well throughout his career despite the fact that people don't know really know who he is. I don't know if there's anyone in this Gold Cup that's, you know, Aloy Room and Curaçao in general played above their skis, with Aloy Room being a reason why.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look at that Jamaica team last night, which probably has been one of the more surprised teams, would you say? Or yeah, I mean,
they're gonna be competitive
but
in the,
like,
octagonal.
I mean, let's be honest here. Liam Fraser's on the Crew, and he's been an on and off starter, at least coming off the bench for Canada, who is very competitive now in CONCACAF. You know, I don't see them being able to go in and get anybody from Mexico. You know, if we're just talking that central midfield spot.
They signed someone from Qatar, that'd be hilarious. Yeah.
Why not?
They are fun to watch.
I haven't seen them. It's so odd. And I know why they're in the tournament, but it's just odd that they're in there.
I mean, two years ago, they won the Asian Cup. They beat Japan in the final.
And USA is playing them
on
Thursday.
How nuts is it that Gold Cup semifinals, all three North American countries, and then a country in the Middle East that's hosting the World Cup, if Qatar wins the Gold Cup, they would become just the second country in FIFA history to win continental championships in two different continents, because Australia's done it in Oceania and Asia.
And
could you imagine if Qatar hosts the World Cup and be the champions of Asia and CONCACAF? That'd be the most CONCACAF thing to ever happen.
Yes, it would. For the same reason that they're hosting it.
So
we have to see oil money.
Yeah, we have to see if the United States can take them. That game's in Austin Thursday night. It's a huge game. Canada-Mexico, also a huge game.
Canada-Mexico game?
That's going to be in Houston, and then the final will be Sunday in
Vegas
at the Allegiant Stadium.
Huh. All right. Well, you know, I am half Canadian. My mom was born in Calgary, so I'd like Canada being more competitive.
I would guess that most people in Columbus for Mexico, Canada, most Crew fans would probably root for Canada.
Most American fans would probably
prefer to play Canada in the final.
Well, and just, you want to see better. Mexico. I mean, I think the idea of playing Mexico is always great, but,
sure,
like, that's your rival,
we'll
and you want to
see
them lose,
again,
right?
I think a USA-Canada final would be a lot of fun.
And I think Canada, you know, the one thing I will say is it's always hard to beat a team twice in these type of tournaments. It doesn't happen a lot. And, you know, it's like playing any team in a season in short succession. So, you know, that would be a little bit tricky. But, you know, I think you'd rather see that team. And I think that Canadian team is going to be a team that continues to build, you know, U.S. Opens World Cup qualifying against Canada.
In Nashville.
This is going to start being, I think, a bit more of a rivalry than it's been. It's never going to be U.S.-Mexico. But, you know, I mean, it's the same, you know, right above the United States, obviously, and if they can consistently compete in CONCACAF, now you've got another team besides Mexico, the U.S., and Costa Rica. I thought Jamaica's done some good things.
Yeah.
But
you know,
you're
in a position in CONCACAF now where the favorites to make it out of the octagonal three teams are going to be the North American countries. It's going to be Mexico, the U.S., and Canada as the favorites.
And I just think this, and I don't think people realize this. I was talking to somebody about this today. Like, CONCACAF has gotten so much better than it was, you know, even two World Cup cycles ago. And I think MLS has had so, you know, the idea of MLS was coming off that 94 World Cup, even the 90 World Cup. Let's get a league that will help build the American. And what it's done in the last probably 10, 15 years is open doors that for some, you know, Jamaicans, Haitians, Canadians, you know, some Mexicans, but they have their own league. You know, some of these other countries, Trinidad and Tobago, Costa Rica, that have, and Costa Rica has always been solid, but these guys are now playing in a much more competitive league than they most of them were at home. You know, you see the good guys go over to Europe and play somewhere, but, you know, it's had that effect that I don't think people saw. And, you know, when the U.S. didn't make it for the last World Cup, you know, there's a lot that went into that, but that was the most competitive CONCACAF region there'd been.
Now it's even more competitive.
Exactly.
That's going to be interesting, and we have the semifinals of the Gold Cup coming up later this week. Let's make our pick with the NYC FC. Boy, busy soccer week with the Olympics going on as well.
4 a.m. wake up for USA Australia Tuesday morning. By the time you're listening to this, that game will be over.
Yeah.
Yes, but I will watch it later because that's been the way I've done that.
The only
with both basketball
Japan
and
soccer. Japan is 13 hours ahead of us. I'm like, they might as well be a week ahead of us. I'm like, what's going on here? The time is like bending.
Tuesday morning Olympics, something worth waking up for. It's not that early. 7 a.m. USA Japan softball gold medal game. And then baseball's going to start soon.
That field for softball is a disgrace.
It's like Yankee Stadium for MLS.
These women are sliding on asteroids.
I know, it's awful.
It's a joke.
And speaking of that, for the Women's World Cup in Canada, it was the same thing. They're playing on AstroTurf.
Wait, the you're saying the International Olympic Committee isn't quite putting out the best facilities, on par facilities for women as they do for men? It is.
All the money spent. Just, like that, the skateboarding is fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
A lot of money was put into that. You can't build. Ohio State has a dedicated softball center. You can't build one of those.
Put the Olympics in Columbus, IOC.
It's a disgrace. I turned it off because I was so mad. It's like, what? They're sliding on AstroTurf? This is like a charity softball game.
Mm-hmm.
Stop with this. Oh, now we've really gone off the rails. Yeah,
we always do.
Let's pick the NYC game, and then we'll get out of here. Murph?
I will say the Crew get a 1-1 draw. I'm always very wary of playing on that narrow field. Like I said, it reminds me of, granted, you had to fly out to California for the San Jose games, but it's just such a tough place to play, and not because of the fans or anything like that, but just
I can't hear.
Yeah, such
Are
a narrow
there?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Such a narrow field. I don't think it really plays into the Crew's strengths, though. As we talked about earlier, it's a different way of playing right now for the Crew, but I'll say a 1-1 draw. Let's go with another Lucas free kick. Let's just New York City up 1-0. Stupid foul at the top of the box. He puts.
You know they're gonna do it. You know they can't. They can't help themselves. They will do it. Say it.
I'm gonna go 2-1 Crew. I think Lucas scores the winner, but from the run of play. I'm not gonna say it's from a set piece.
Penalty kick would be funny because it's like, well,
that doesn't count as a run of play.
No,
but
I just
scored a penalty this year. No,
no.
They had a penalty this year.
Yeah,
no. I don't think they've had one.
Should have had three Wednesday.
Right.
Yeah, that would be funny because it'd still be a set piece goal against. I mean, it wouldn't be a free kick goal, so it wouldn't count that way.
I still think it's gonna be 2-1 just because I feel that even on that small postage stamp, you still have guys like Pedro Santos, like Matan, that can really kind of dance around some players and kind of make them commit.
Well, and a weird one, and I meant to bring this up earlier when we were talking about it, Friday game, which changes your, you know, played on Saturday, granted Saturday afternoon, but, you know, changes the game week a little
bit.
But
I also believe Caleb will change the tactics again. Maybe either go back or, like, maybe do something screwy, like go like a 4-3-3.
Or the field's so small, maybe we'll just put eight guys.
I think 4-4-2 might be the formation again.
They
played
pretty good with 10 players against Cincinnati. Who knows?
Yeah, they sure did. Just take somebody off. Harry, you take another game off. That's another thing. That was Harrison Offel's birthday.
Yeah, and he didn't play.
He got the day off. Just got to chill in Atlanta.
And they won.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it's a nice way to spend your birthday. Just watch the crew win from a great seat.
And it also shows you that signing Abdul Salam was a great idea.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think that was very tactical on Caleb's part. Not to take anything away from Harry. Anyway.
Ari?
All right. New York City plays at Yankee Stadium. So this is what they're going to do. They're going to emulate their baseball brothers.
No.
They're going to be up 1-0. They're going to find some stupid, creative way to lose. And what they're going to do is accidentally foul someone right on the edge of the box. The ref's going to call a penalty instead and VAR it. The crew's going to score the penalty. And then in stoppage time, New York City's going to, like, kick it backwards. And then the ball's going to go over the keeper's head on backspin and be an own goal winner. It'll be another own goal winner because Yankee State.
I would have gone to Bart first if I would have thought.
Does that make own goal the leading scorer again? Tied four, right?
Tied, maybe.
Giassi has three?
Zellerán has five.
Oh, yeah, good point.
So, but either way, New York City equals Yankees. Embarrassing, creative ways to lose. They're going to lose again to Columbus, and they're going to lose again 2-1. It'd be the third time this season they lose by that scoreline. Wow. So, but I do think because of the, in all seriousness, I think because of the tactic, I think they'll play 4-4-2 again. Columbus riding this wave. They're starting to figure out their form on the road. I think they end July undefeated. Get the dub.
Very nice. Bart?
I'm going to go with 3-2 crew in this one.
Yeah.
I think that Marlon Harrison finally does finish. He's been knocking on the door. I think they let him in. He helped puts the crew in front 1-0. Let's. I think Miguel Berry maybe gets in this one with a little bit of rotation, especially if it's a 4-4-2. So I think Miggy Berry continues to his hot form. Then NYCFC comes back, fights back, make it 2-2, and stoppage time and death. What looks like a foul in the box, and so it's like, oh, Lucas fouled, penalty awarded, wait, VAR, they bring it out just outside the box.
Oh, my God.
And Lucas hits it, just curls it right over, dings off.
I think just outside the box just makes it worse.
I know, I know, but for the purposes.
You mean
because
Bart's predictions are usually so realistic? Yes,
yeah, yeah.
I
got it once.
I was expecting Bart to say, like, Lucas Cillerion gets subbed out for Josh Williams.
Yeah.
And then Josh Williams scores the free kick.
Lucas draws what looks like a penalty. He actually flags Caleb Porter, asks him to take him off, and Josh comes in cold off the bench and nails the free kick.
Marshall did that.
I will say,
not off the bench, but he did bang home a couple free kicks.
Two months ago, Lucas, with the two free kicks against New York City and Jersey, Caleb Porter called him the Argentine Babe Ruth. If Lucas scores on Friday and does a baseball celebration, that'd be like
He should point the corner that he's going.
Call his shot.
Yes.
He should visit a kid in the hospital.
Call his shot.
Put a cigar in his mouth.
Yankees sign Lucas Cellerion, please.
He did say he knew who Babe Ruth was. I'm not sure I believe him, but he did say he knew.
I'll say I could see like Federico Higuain, like just back in the day, just like chowing down on a hot dog, you know, on the field or something. Yeah, smoking cigarettes, you know, doing whatever he wants. I don't know about Lucas on that, though. I don't know that he'd just be chowing down in that.
I can't top any of that. You know, I'm gonna call a weird thing because I saw him get forward against Nashville. I'm calling a booba goal.
Ooh, I like it.
That was another set piece. Huge.
He suddenly just got a burr in his saddle and went forward. It didn't work out.
Well, that's what
Ty was saying. He's like one of the fastest guys on the team.
He's so fast. And he just came out of nowhere and decided to keep going against Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling a booba goal. And a Lucas free kick. 2-0.
Did everybody pick a Lucas free kick?
Of course.
No. I picked a Lucas penalty because VAR is going to screw up the foul.
2-0 crew because Room is going to control the room. Mm-hmm. That's what he's going to do. All right. Thank our sponsor, Saucy Brewworks.
I do thank Saucy Brewworks. I prefer them to the Yankees. Saucy Brewworks is bar. It just happens to be the best one in Columbus. there's also this thing called the Earth, and this place called Saucy Brewworks happens to be the best place on Earth. So Saucy Brewworks, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? 334.
Please like and subscribe.
West third.
Yeah, we do want to mention that Saucy Brewworks also have a coffee shop, a fantastic coffee shop.
Which coffee Brewworks.
That we could,
coffee
but we sit in every week.
We sit in every week. So if you don't want a beer, you can come and have coffee.
Or pizza.
Really nice.
You can have
that's
so many things.
Drinking yeah. coffee.
Coffee, beer, pizza.
That's what we get in our breaks is the coffee.
I don't. I mean, some people do. Some people don't. Either way, I don't know.
Well, my friend Colin calls coffee and beer, one after the other, the poor man's speedball. So that's what we're doing here at Saucy Brew.
That's a good way to end this podcast. Yeah.
So we'll see you next week as we look back at NYCFC and ahead to whatever we got going on.
Got DC on Wednesday DC at the dot.
DC on
yes, I called
Wednesday
it the dot, Pat.
The dot.
It's the LDC.
But
the dot.
There's so much drama in the LDC.
Don't be so heartless about me calling it the dot.
It won't be sold out because they won't do anything new.
Well, we'll talk to you next week regardless. We'll be there, and you'll be there too at massreport.com. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week.